welcome to the 28th episode of the Reckless Dice Podcast, where we discuss Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay 3rd Edition. With us tonight is our lich-like troubadour, Lester Crowe, and his strolling bones.
Greetings.
Jordan Bloody Sunboy Steelman.
Aloha.
And Layla Fridge Gargoyle Miranova.
Hola.
And I am Jesse Gitzman Burke. Let's recklessly kick it off with some news. So, we're about 3 weeks since the last episode, and I think about everything that could have happened has happened. We've had two pretty significant announcements, one of which is the Enemy Within Grand Campaign. Yeah, so how does everybody feel about this? We're going to spend quite a bit of this episode breaking it down, talking about what we know, answering some questions, but this is big news.
Yeah, it pretty much reaffirms what you said about them making a big campaign. We just thought that it was going to come later. I'm excited.
We all thought it was going to be Storm of Chaos, and I think that was generally accepted to be. I think everybody out there said it's going to be Storm of Chaos. I don't think there was any alternative to that.
Well, there's still a chance that that comes up.
Yeah. Well, honestly, I think that this their new take on the Enemy Within will probably end up leading into a Storm of Chaos type event. So.
And I do believe you're correct there. I think they said in the press release that as an optional epilogue to the adventure, there is a tie-in to the to Heroes Call, and Heroes Call has many tie-ins to Storm of Chaos. So I'm not really sure where all those connect, but I think you're onto something there. Because let's hop into Enemy Within in a moment. I want to cover a few of the other news bits that happened over the last week. So everybody's got Heroes Call now, right? Oh, you mean it's still on the boat?
No, not in Sweden.
Yeah, we're all still waiting for it, which is kind of odd, because we're now pushing, I think, something like 5 or 6 weeks since we had an opportunity to chat with Marcus on and go over all the content and unbox it. That's a long time to have Northern Europe have access to the game. Maybe everybody else still fighting for it.
Maybe he's just tricking us, and he like flew into China directly.
I think
to the printers.
He's just pretending that all that stuff. He's just making the statistics up.
No, I'm pretty sure he's being accurate, but I think he just went to China.
That's where they do the printing.
Yeah, that is exactly where they do the printing.
So you're saying that it was printed and put on a boat and completely bypassed the United States and went over another ocean and got to him first?
No. He went over. My theory is he went to China.
Oh, because that is exactly what you said. I just completely ignored that.
Yeah, exactly. I'm used to it, but.
Sorry. I was stuck on this like concept of like this boat that would go across the ocean and then like drill underneath the United States and like come up on the other side and keep going.
But what I'm curious about is like nobody else has really come forward and talked about it at all on like that I've seen. I haven't really been overly active on the forums.
There is one forum post that's going right now where somebody has been very actively answering questions anybody's had, and they've revealed a lot of very specific data, like starting statistics for ogres and halflings, all the racial abilities for the different human regions.
Ooh, I should check that out.
Pretty much any specific question everybody's asked has been resolved there. I believe it's called Heroes Call Spoilers, I think was the title of the thread. So that one's pretty definitely active. And if you haven't read that and are dying for some new tidbits, definitely check it out.
Oh, I'm definitely going to check that out.
So aside from that, on Saturday, I know a lot of you guys from the community joined us. Some of you weren't able to make it, unfortunately, but we did do the Map Tools, social event where we had a pretty good turnout. We had about 10 people come and participate in learning how to use Map Tools, and we, got together, learned the tools. We also collectively made a map and did an impromptu game kind of on the fly. Everybody made some characters, had some fun, and we did record the whole thing and put that up as a live episode. So that one is a little less organized than most of our formal play sessions, but there's some really good content in there as a tutorial for learning map tools, and also the second half of it is us actually playing the game, and we had a hysterical time. So
if you're a fan of Rob the Goat,
if you Rob the Goat did make an appearance and had a grisly end.
Yeah.
So definitely worth checking out. There was
Did he get eaten?
I mean, really, we'd be giving it away.
I think the screenshot that we posted on the site to accompany the episode, if you look in the chat window on the left, you will see the quote of the day for the game, and it mentions exactly what's worth seeing.
You can't see it, though.
Can't you, though?
It's too small.
Oh, if you open up in Facebook, it might be too small. I think if you go to the actual Reckless Dice page, it's a little easier to see. Anyway, it was fantastic. A lot of people enjoyed it, and there's been a lot of talk about trying to get a online community going or some kind of forum that people can use to try and, you know, hook up. Because we had people all the way from the Philippines all the way to, was it Slovenia?
Like, that's what you said.
That's what we had to look
I
up.
I wasn't and actually there.
We had to do part
I
of
was
our...
sleeping.
We had to do another geography lesson to learn where Slovenia was.
Yeah, I was like, what? Slovenia is still a country?
And it is.
The amount of knowledge about geography is really overwhelming between the two of us.
Yeah.
But you know what? It is growing at exponential rates right now.
We actually Google this stuff after we're wrong about it, so...
So I think we'll do this again sometime. It was a lot of fun. We'll probably do it in a couple months from now, but it was definitely a hoot. So, Lester, do you want to tell us a little bit about the new print-on-demand supplement?
Are we talking about this Legends of the Warhammer High Seas?
We are.
I was actually really shocked to see this, personally. I don't know. I thought that they were going to kind of continue on onwards with a theme and release, you know, more of the divine powers, and then more and bring out more wizard powers and things like that.
You know, I did too.
That's what I thought. I didn't think they were going to do this. I honestly feel that it's because Games Workshop's really trying to push this Dreadfleet thing. I think they printed a whole bunch of copies and didn't sell as many as they wanted to. And Phil Kelly's probably really sad about that. But this just seems really out of place and weird. I guess it kind of fits with the Hero's Call that we haven't seen yet, but that should be coming soon because, I mean, as far as I understand, Dreadfleet is this epic, it takes place in this epic, like, almost extra-dimensional time warp sort of chaos-ridden ocean segment.
I own a copy of Dreadfleet, and I've played it a few times now, and it's pretty awesome. And I'll do a quick overview of what it is. It's a Games Workshop does a lot of spin-off games inspired by their main Warhammer franchises. So
HeroQuest.
HeroQuest is not one of them.
Is the best one ever made.
Warhammer Quest, I hope you're thinking of, but HeroQuest was cool too.
Yeah. The original.
Yes, yeah. So Dreadfleet is kind of a redo in a sense of a game called Mana War, which came out probably like 15 years ago, and it is a naval battle game set in the Warhammer world. So Dreadfleet specifically is a takes place in this like maelstrom of in this kind of like chaotic sea. And it's not like another dimension. It's just kind of if you were to take like a chaos gate and throw it in the ocean somewhere and all the chaos that would ensue from that, that's kind of where the game takes place. And there is an evil fleet and a good guy fleet, and there's five ships on each side, and each ship has a captain of generally each has a captain is a different race.
Mm-hmm. Chaos Dwarfs.
That's where I was going. There is a Chaos Dwarf now officially, or there will be once this comes out in Warhammer roleplay. So we're going to have some kind of statistics for a Chaos Dwarf captain, and that's pretty awesome.
I wonder if that's going to lead to more like discussion on that, maybe involving Chaos Dwarves if they do.
You know, frankly, this is one of the first times that they've acknowledged their existence in a pretty long time.
Yeah, it's true.
you know, they've been kind of pushed to the back burner and kind of tried to make everybody forget about them for quite a while. I think the last resurgence of them I saw was with the Hell Cannon of Chaos in the tabletop game.
Yeah.
The crew were Chaos Dwarves, and that was the first time they had reappeared since the old models. So, you know, that's pretty big news. But let's are you guys comfortable going over a bit of what we can expect to see in that supplement?
For sure.
All right. So what are we getting there?
Well, it says here that you can anticipate about 40 different cards, and from the pictures, it looks almost as though they have put cutouts in the cards, like stand-ups.
Yeah.
But I wonder, like, so you're going to fold those or cut them out of the cards? Or
It looks to me, yeah, I think we're looking at the picture right now on the press release, and in the top left corner, you'll see upside down the just for those of you who don't know, the artwork we're looking at here is from the Dreadfleet game.
Which is amazing.
So the artwork on the bottom right where you see all the captains, there's 10 captains there. That's 5 good guys and 5 bad guys. That is the art from the book. And then we're actually on a actual playing card size, you're getting a double-faced cutout token. So you're not going to – it kind of concerns me a little bit. You're not going to get the nice hardboard tokens. You're going to actually cut these out and fold them over. They're going to have a different feel to them than the normal ones.
I wonder how those are going to work. That was one of my concerns almost. I mean, I don't know why really they needed to go to the effort of doing that. I mean, you could always just proxy something in, and that would have made it so that you could have more cards, like for actions or locations or anything. But
does anybody else feel one way or another about the thin card tokens?
Well, not particularly. I think I think we're just kind of having to deal with these limitations when we're talking about print-on-demand products. Mm-hmm. I mean, in order to keep it cost-effective, to be able to release things like this, they just have to keep it as simple as possible. And
But I just think that they shouldn't have even put them in there. Like, you don't really need the stand-ups for the character. Oh, yeah. You could have... I mean, there's going to be 10 stand-ups. That's 10 extra cards that they could have done anything with.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is substantially larger than the 15-card... Sigmar packet they did last time.
Exactly, because they added, in my opinion, unnecessary fold-over paper stand-ups. I mean, they could have added items, they could have added a whole bunch of more actions, or even, like, cards that had stories on them or something. I don't know, anything but those stand-ups, because you can always proxy something in to represent them.
To that effect, it looks like the 40 cards are going to contain the 10 NPCs, 10 NPC stand-ups, roughly 10 action cards, and then it looks like 6 location cards.
And then 2 rule cards, it looks like, are like, this is how you use these.
And if I do my math, that doesn't add up to 40, but that's okay. I think it's roughly 40.
Yeah, it says 40-ish, I'm pretty sure. Well, it says it's an exciting 40-card pack, so...
Maybe the cover art counts as exciting. But well, either way, I think
it's a pretty good cover art.
And yeah. Just today I got my email that said it shipped, so we should actually have those in our hands very soon, certainly by next episode.
Well, maybe this is a key to getting to that magic number 40, but you notice the action cards that are splayed out in the main promo image don't have any images, any pictures on them, but then the two below... With the bitter tenacity and the captain's presence, they have artwork on them, so that would suggest maybe either those are 2 additional cards on top of the ones that are splayed out, or maybe this is just an earlier promotional.
It's you being all detective. That's nice, man. Good observation there.
He is Batman.
You rolled a boon on your check.
He rolled
that bloody time.
About bloody sun boy time. sorry, that was really weak. I apologize. I'm just kind of still waking up. But I mean,
I love that you're still waking up at like 10 o'clock at night.
I'm a night owl, man. I work all night long. So anyway, I am interested in the fact that they are like, cause this came out of left field. I wasn't expecting this. So this gives me hope that they might release item packs for like. Well,
so let's jump on that concept for a second. This everybody was thinking that they were going to continue the safe route of continuing to release, priestly orders, or faith spells and magic spells.
Mm.
And I think it was almost a foregone conclusion that we were just going to get more of those next. Right. And we were surprised not only once by getting the Enemy Within Redux, but we're also getting this completely out of left field print on demand.
Yeah, totally.
And I really think, or tell me what you guys think, do you think that they are releasing this now as this Pirates bit to really show what print on demand could be? Show what it's capable of?
I think that's part of it. I honestly think it's just that Phil Kelly was disappointed that they didn't sell as many copies of Dreadfleet as he wanted to, so Games Workshop was like, come on, Fantasy Flight Games, you got to produce this.
That's true, too.
That's my cynical side, but I mean, I do think it's cool because it opens up all these options. It shows that you don't have to be stuck in the Empire in order to explore Warhammer Fantasy roleplay.
Isn't this generally the first naval themed anything Warhammer scene?
Yeah. Well, for the role playing game, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. Then we still don't have rules for running around on boats, but either way, you can have some fun with it. I'm sure.
I think it adds more options, or at least people can play Manaan priests a little bit easier because it always seems so weird to me to play one of those because they're kind of useless when you're like in the middle of the mountains and there's no river anywhere near.
Well, let's see, our last bit of news before we hop into what we know about the Enemy Within is we're doing a poll on the Facebook page about ogres, and we've actually had quite a good response to that so far, so we can talk a bit about where that's at. We asked everybody, and they bring
Where
up
is
our...
this poll? I had trouble even finding this poll.
Is this time to bash on Facebook? Let's do that.
I have so much anger about this new layout. I can't even figure out what's going on this page, and I'm one of the admins. I'm so confused.
Oh, yeah, it makes sense to me for, an individual to use that FaceTime...
The timeline.
Yeah, the timeline. Oh. It's kind of weird, and I'm really confused with it, but as far as... the utility for a page for our podcast just seems so weird because the whole point of it is to have community interaction and make it easy for the fans, the reckless fans to interact with us. So,
and it's just clumping everybody's comments into these like one-liners that you then have to click individually in order to read. And let's face it, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, and I still don't even know where it is, where their show up. Like when I post,
that's my main criticism, and I know everybody's feeling a little bit of angst about that right now. Okay, so just a bit of clarification for what's going on. I'm not really defending what's happening, but just kind of. There's not a lot of control on our end on it to some degree as well. Facebook is turning to this timeline format for both their personal pages, which has already happened, and they're just recently now pushing company pages and pages like ours operate to the timeline format as well. What that means then is that you have the opportunity to voluntarily adopt the timeline format ahead of time if you want, but everybody's being forced to transition to it this month. So
basically, we have no choice.
You don't have a choice.
You have to deal with it, and so do we.
Now, will they improve it over time? Yeah, probably.
Whatever.
Will they address this concern? God, I hope so, because the way it stands right now, any posts that we as Reckless Dice make show up very prominently, and then any comments you guys make to our posts show up very prominently. The biggest downfall, though, is any post that the community members make, pictures, video, questions, anything like that, show up in a very tight little block at the top, not in a timeline format, and makes it very difficult for anybody to participate on the page and really feel heard. And I totally agree with that.
And go back and see what else, if I don't check the Facebook page for 3 days or whatever, I can't see what people... posted 3 days ago, or it's hard for me to find it, and then I just get frustrated and I rage quit, and I don't I'm just like
or in my case I just rant because
I'm like, catch this, and I leave Facebook.
So I guess what I want to say is I'm very actively looking through the functionality on the timeline to try and bring your guys' community posts as forward as possible. As it stands right now, that option is not available in timeline. I'm hoping Facebook adds it, and it's not like we're purposely trying to subdue what you guys are saying. We definitely want that stuff up front, even more so than our stuff.
And the conspiratorial side of me wants to say, get used to it with this Web 2.0, with the Web 2.0 thing.
Are we still in 2.0? That's been like 10 years.
Well, like 9.7. I don't know. But all I know is YouTube's doing the same thing. They're changing over to a new format, which is equally as frustrating and difficult to navigate. So, next thing you know, you're going to have a computer chip in your head, and then you're not even going to know how to operate that, and it's going to be confusing.
So let's talk about our Ogre poll. We had a good turnout. The six options were, I won't be playing one.
It's got to be a big poll if it's an Ogre poll.
It was a big poll.
Sorry, that was bad.
Stripper.
Oh, that's nasty.
That would also need a big poll.
It was perhaps ogrific.
That's a good one.
I won't be playing one, but I'll be sure to be adding one to my next game as an NPC. I can't wait to kill one. I'm not sure how I feel yet. I like the oddity of urban ogres.
I'm not sure how I feel yet.
Used moderately.
What is there to decide?
Why do we love people? Like, I don't...
That is an absurd option.
Yet it came in third.
And yet people chose it. Really? Like, really?
Well, people are like, why do we need ogres to begin with? You know, we were doing just fine with all this other stuff. Why spend...
Ogres
why bring ogres?
I guess I'm just shocked that people have angst about the ogres and their presence in the game. That's what I'm shocked about.
Especially considering they're like staple, you know, they've been in Warhammer lore forever, pretty much.
Yeah.
I'm also shocked that nobody chose the I can't wait to play one option.
Except one person.
Which was me.
I would play one. It's just that it's not that I can't wait to play it. I'm not like, I don't get the bit to play an ogre. I would play one, but it's like...
So you're still looking for a way to kill Helga so you can play an ogre.
So what you're saying is we need to put another option in that says, I might play one at some point.
Yeah, once I've explored other options like getting to play a wizard.
That's too long for an option.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just saying that's why I didn't pick, I can't wait to play one, because my option wasn't supported.
With a pretty healthy lead, I won't be playing one, but I'll be sure to add one into my next game as an NPC was the clear winner there. So I think everybody likes the ogres. Playing them, though, I think you're on your own there, Leila.
I think they just make for awkward PCs. I mean, when you kind of think about trying to throw an ogre
exactly
into a party of other characters, you know.
I just imagine like comedy gold happening.
I would agree with you there. So let's hop in after the break to The Enemy Within and talk about really everything we know at this point and what we can expect with that packet. All right, we're back. So we are going to take the majority of this episode to discuss The Enemy Within Redux and really explore everything we know about the game. And also, about 2 weeks ago, we polled you guys with a bunch of questions you had on the supplement, and we're going to do our best to either just discuss them or answer them with the information we do know. For those of you unfamiliar with the new supplement, or the campaign, rather, there are three pieces of content that are out there right now that you can read to learn more about it. The first one is a press release by Fantasy Flight Games. We'll link that in the show notes. The second one is a slightly different press release with almost the identical content, just worded a little differently. You can extract a few more tidbits from that one, also by Fantasy Flight. And I'm not really sure why there were the two. I think one might be the product announcement page, while the other one is the press release announcement. And the last piece is a blog announcement from from Graham Davis, who is the co-author of The Enemy Within. And he talked quite a bit about the history of the campaign, its development cycle over the years from first edition until now, There's not a lot of details about the campaign, but for those of you who are interested in game design and, you know, chatting with the guy who's working on it, we'll link his blog post in the show notes as well. So, guys, what do we know so far? What is the Enemy Within 2.0 Redux revamp thing?
Shouldn't we start with the Enemy Within originally and, like, maybe speculate as to why they chose this to re-release it?
So I've never played the Enemy Within, and I have only heard good things.
But you've read it. Have you read it?
I have not read it.
Okay.
I know nothing about it.
If you ever intend to play it, don't read it.
Yeah, because
you don't want to spoil it.
I'm assuming if I'm ever going to be playing it, I'm GMing it.
That's why I've read it.
So tell me about the first one. Why should we really care about the Enemy Within? Why was this redone for third edition?
Well, I mean, it's kind of the first thing that any veteran Warhammer player thinks of, I guess. Whenever you think of Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, you think of the Enemy Within.
Geralded is one of the greatest role-playing campaigns of all time, regardless of system.
Right, yeah.
Across I have heard the system. That.
It's interesting because, on the whole, it's regarded as being a very good, interesting, in-depth, involving campaign, but the individual parts of it, some of the later elements, Power Behind the Throne, Something Rotten in Kislev, and Empire in Flames, which was supposed to be the finale of the original, were met with less enthusiasm than the earlier parts, you know, Shatters Over Bogenhofen and Death on the Right particularly. So it's interesting. It's an interesting piece that a lot of people have a whole lot of praise for the campaign as a campaign, but the individual pieces of the campaign people have different opinions on.
Was it multiple books originally, or is it all one?
When it was first released, it was box sets, because, you know, like we're talking what, the mid to late 80s and into the early 90s, and so it was first released in box sets, and it came with, you know, your little perfect, or what is it, your little staple bound booklets and with loose maps and that sort of thing.
But it was multiple products.
It was. In fact,
it's my understanding that this edition is all one piece, as opposed to a three-part campaign that we were kind of talking about.
They're saying that there's going to be more than 30 sessions worth, so I'm assuming they're going on an average of two-hour sessions. The 32-hour session is worth.
Well, they say there's three in the new one. There's three adventures included in the box, so I'm guessing they're saying, you know, each adventure could potentially yield up to 10 sessions worth of play.
Now, somewhere in the comments, I read that somebody said that the campaign takes place over 30 days. I didn't hear that verified anywhere, but that, you know, maybe each day is meant to be part of the adventure, so perhaps it's a 30-day timeline tied into
that. That seems a little weird to me, considering they're saying that it can take characters from the very beginning of their career all the way through to third rank. If it's only 30 days, I mean, how are you going to go from being a wizard apprentice to...
Obviously, they're going to, like, Healed College or something and, you know, getting their mechanics degree and, like, wrapping
time warp. They're being rushed through the ranks.
They did a Warhammer montage.
Yeah,
they did an 80s training montage.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my Lord.
Well, we know I guess all of this is rumor at this point, but I've heard that the box set will be $60. So that's a little on the pricier side of the box sets we've seen so far, but given the amount of content that they're touting, that sounds about right.
Probably at least three books. I'm gonna say three books for one for each of the adventures.
Mm-hmm. And we know that the game takes place in Averheim and other richly detailed cities, but I believe it focuses on Averheim,
which is swell. That's my favorite place in all the Empire.
And that's interesting, because that'll be the first time that we've really seen a Warhammer Fantasy supplement explore Averland in any detail, really.
Because they did a little bit in Journey to Blackfyre Pass, right?
Oh, yeah, that's true, I guess.
Just a little bit, though.
It's my understanding that this is not a retelling of the Enemy Within 1.0. Yeah. It's like they're trying to take the best of what made that adventure great and remake it in a new place with new people and make it like so you're not having anybody who's already played the Enemy Within 1.0 will still have a new adventure to play in 2.0.
Right, which I think is the right thing to do. I think if they had just tried to regurgitate the original campaign, it probably wouldn't have met with a whole lot of interest.
It would have flopped. Well, because anybody can then go back and take the original Enemy Within and they can port it into third edition.
I mean,
I really like how it seems here where it says Dark Times in Aberland. It seems like they're going to focus on one of my favorite story hooks that I've used several times in games before with the Elector Count of Aberland, because he was slain by orcs, I believe, as they killed him and they haven't replaced him yet. So there's this like there's all this underlying politicking going on for people who are trying to become the next Elector Count of Aberland.
Mm-hmm.
So it will still have that political background that there is in the original.
Right. Well, and there's something stylistically, something I noticed that stood out to me, which said, well, a couple of reasons why this clearly couldn't just be kind of a rehash of the original Enemy Within. One of those being timeline. The original first edition Enemy Within, if you're trying to stick to, you know, what passes for Warhammer canon in the role-playing game, the original Enemy Within campaign is set in 2512, whereas, you know, third edition, I think, we don't really know, I guess, but some of the maps and everything were suggesting that it's like, what, 2522 or 2523?
I think at the very beginning, I think in one of the opening paragraphs of the original rule book, it does actually state what year it is.
But it's coming upon the Storm of Chaos, which happens sometime later, and of course the old edition, the first edition of Warhammer in the setting, you know, represented the Emperor as, you know, Karl Franz is kind of more of a figurehead, and he was less prominent and less, you know, outspoken and outgoing. Where, you know, obviously with the product box of the new Enemy Within, we get him with his glorious, you know, wielding Galmaraz, wading into battle, standing next to his war griffin, you know.
Let's
talk about that for a second. That artwork for a second, because we can extrapolate a little bit of what the campaign's going to be about here.
The darkest. What are we? One of the greatest artists ever.
So that is Karl Franz there next to his griffin, right?
I would assume so. It looks just like him. Yeah.
Except I would say so.
I'm not seeing any facial hair, which is throwing me off a little bit, but it does look like him with Galmaraz there.
And what is he fighting around him there? That looks like
Beastmen.
Yeah.
I just think that will only be one part of it though, because if it's going to be 30 sessions worth of stuff, I'm assuming you're going to see Skaven and you're going to
see a little bit of everybody.
Stuff.
Yeah. That could be cool. I could give Undead a chance.
There's going to be some ogres in there, some halflings.
Well, it's going to come with GM resources to manage adventures of this scope, and I'm putting that in air quotes. So we might be seeing some new GMing tools on handling larger scale adventures where you're not kind of in an individual town. You're handling things like travel and
I hope there's a
long periods of time.
I hope there's a map in it, and I hope there's a bunch of really good handouts, but like a big map, like a nice map, not that those stupid little card maps.
Well, let's take that concept for a second and rewind to the Heroes Call. If you recall, Marcus Anderson told us that Heroes Call did not come with the normal small maps we're used to. It came with a much larger one.
Yeah.
So Fantasy Flight may have listened to everybody where they want their big maps. I'm kind of expecting, since they did it with Heroes Call, to see big maps in this one as well.
Oh yeah.
Well, maps were one of the quality and the plethora of maps in the first edition Enemy Within adventures were one of the like crowning achievements. I mean, you get this huge fold-out map for like a Death on the Reich for Castle Wittgenstein, and it's like super detailed. But that's how the campaign is set, and I could only hope that to live up to, you know, some of the spirit of the original campaign, that it should be accompanied by some really good maps.
And some handouts, too. I like the idea of being able to hand out stuff to your
that was another
players.
Thing that was really...
Well, they mentioned there would be cards, sheets, maps, and handouts.
Yeah, I'm assuming they're going to have some pretty cool stuff for the players to get their hands on.
One of the last bits I learned, I think this was from the blog entry from Graham Davis. He mentioned that he wrote this adventure for Warhammer. It's written for 3rd edition, it's not necessarily 3rd edition exclusive. And what I mean, or what he's getting at there is that, it's written for 3rd edition, it's packaged and everything for that, but he said that an experienced GM could very easily translate it into 1st or 2nd edition if you so wanted to.
If you haven't come over to the dark side, if you're bearded,
I just thought that was interesting. You know, he made sure that anybody who wanted to enjoy this would have no problem doing it.
Yeah. I think Graham's intent is just that he's more concerned with making sure that it's legitimately Warhammer, as opposed to Warhammer 3rd edition or Warhammer 2nd edition just that it's true to the Warhammer spirit.
That leads me to believe, or that's giving me lots of hope, that the story will be really in-depth and really solid. Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, some of the adventures so far have been a little bit light on excellence.
On excellence?
I mean, they're not bad, but a lot of them are really see-through. Like, I have some players who I've played with here and there who aren't necessarily the brightest tools in the shed. If that works, brightest bulbs in the ceiling fan. But they see...
You got any more of those? Keep them coming.
They've seen right through some of the adventure material, so...
Sharpest tool in the shed?
Yeah, sure. That's what it is, sharpest. Sorry.
Let's get to some questions from our listeners here. Sohn, is that his name?
Sohn Sigmars. That's the I guess you could call them a sister podcast. They run a German podcast on Warhammer.
Oh, excellent. Well, he commented on the Reckless Dice podcast Facebook page, and he wrote, "What's your opinion about the two authors, Graham Davis and Dave Allen? Would it not be better to have only one author? Do you like the adventures of those authors for 3rd edition, The Edge of Night and The Gathering Storm? And how much effort is acceptable to be put in GMing those adventures? In my opinion, there were banana products to ripen at the customer's desk." I mean, I'm not really sure what that last part means.
I think the "to ripen at the customer's desk" is not a universal enough statement. I think a lot of people missed what
I really
what
hope
that meant.
That's a direct translation from a different language, and it's just getting lost. I really hope
well,
that's...
What I think he means there, this would be my translation of that, or my interpretation, is that it means you get the adventure, but you're probably not going to play it exactly like the adventure is written. You're probably going to have to mess around with it a little bit and go in and do a little bit of tooling and tinkering to make it, you know, suit your play style. It's not just going to be universally just playable out of the box. That would be my opinion on what it says.
So is that your opinion of Edge of Night and Gathering Storm?
I have not yet read at Edge of Night. Gathering Storm I personally like. It's pretty long, but I think it's interesting enough, and I enjoyed it. I would say, though, that I personally would change a bunch of stuff if I ran it.
Well, the Graham Davis has worked, and Dave Allen, for that matter, have worked on quite a few of the other adventures that are part of 3rd edition. But generally speaking, I've actually really enjoyed all the 3rd edition adventures. Mm-hmm. I don't think there are any that I'm not a fan of. I do feel a lot of the 3rd edition adventures have been paying homage to previous edition adventures, trying to recreate what worked there in a current edition. And we're seeing it right now with The Enemy Within.
Yeah.
It's my understanding the Edge of Night is kind of a tip of the hat to the Night of the Three Feathers Inn.
Oh, Rough Night of the Three Feathers?
Yeah, that one. So, and I don't really have a problem with that, but I think some people might. But otherwise, I don't have any strong feelings, you know, for or against the work that they've done. Like, it sounds like some others might. I think they've done a great job so far. I'm looking forward to seeing what they're, you know, what they're continuing to work on. I think it's interesting, though, that they did a co-authoring approach to this one.
Well, it makes sense. If it's going to be 30 long and three adventures, one guy's not going to write that. I mean, so he's been writing it for 5 years.
So who is Graham Davis? Do we all know who Graham Davis is? Who is Graham Davis?
He wrote the. He was one of the writers on the initial first edition Enemy Within, both the Enemy Within introductory box set, and then the intro adventure Mistaken Identity, and then of course, he wrote Shatters Over Bogenhoff, and I think he was the primary writer on that one.
Yeah.
So it's my understanding Dave Allen has at least participated in writing most of the adventures that we've seen so far in third edition. Graham Davis is the original author of the original Enemy Within, and they are working in cahoots to develop the current Enemy Within. And I understand it's already been written, according to his blog post. They finished up writing it quite a while ago. So I'm assuming it's all post-writing stuff now. How do you guys feel about having the original Enemy Within author participating in the Redux?
I think it's brilliant, personally.
That's awesome.
Because he can steer, he can add things that worked and take things where it didn't work, and, you know, he can just steer it in a good direction. I think it's brilliant, personally.
Yeah. Well, and he has the benefit, too, of the hindsight of having worked with Warhammer from years past, and then seeing its evolution and kind of, you know, he's one of the few people I think that stayed within the RPG hobby all these years. And so,
you know, I'm going to make a quick plug for a future thing that we're going to do on the podcast. I was able to get in touch with Graham Davis and Dave Allen last week, and they both were, you know, very friendly guys and very, very willing to talk about the work that they've done. And what I talked with them of doing was to schedule perhaps like a written interview where we could not so much talk about the specifics of the Enemy Within, because, of course, that's going to be covered in a non-disclosure right now, but more about game design, writing RPGs, and really what's entailed in doing that, and maybe some of the difficulties in it, and specifically we can talk a bit about the problems and the great things that happened during writing Enemy Within 2.0. For the community members and listeners, if any of you guys have questions or comments that you'd like me to include for them, I'd love to hear them and incorporate it in. Then we'll circle that back with the show at a later date.
Sweet.
Cool.
Interviews are always good.
All right, we've got another listener who's written in and also told us how to pronounce his name several times, I think, at this point, and I still don't know.
I think it's Tim Roos.
Roos, okay. He commented on the Reckless Dice podcast and says, I hope the glory or even glorification of the original campaign will contribute to the success of third edition. Since Davis mentioned on his blog that he wrote the new campaign with Warhammer players from all three editions in mind, I'm happy that we finally get some epic campaign. Hopefully there will be more, and the Enemy Within 2.0 will lead to one dealing with the Storm of Chaos. I'm also wondering what products we can expect for the second quarter of the year.
So he brought up a good point there. We're all expecting Heroes Call to be a first quarter release, and we're dangerously close to the end of the first quarter. So they in the press release for the Enemy Within, they said that would be a third quarter release. Now, I'm assuming then that they're falling into a pattern of releasing these things at the end of the quarter they talk about. So that leaves an obvious hole in the production cycle of, is there anything coming for second quarter?
I think they're focusing on the print-on-demand, and I think we'll see a lot more frequent announcements about print-on-demand products. That's my feeling. As soon as they announced that, I was like, okay, that's probably what they're going to be focusing on. And I don't think we'll see more than four major box products. Probably maybe only three this year. Mm-hmm. But we could see up to, you know, five or six more print-on-demand products, because that seems like it would be really easy to, well, not really easy, but I mean, it would be a lot simpler to produce something like that than it would to produce a full-on boxed supplement.
So you're thinking we'll see more print on demand before we see another announcement for product?
I think there will be another announcement for print on demand before too long here, maybe in a month, two, you know.
So are you thinking second quarter is going to be pretty light as far as box sets go?
I'm thinking so. I mean, but they have managed to surprise us so far this in 2012. So
I mean, obviously they had been quiet working on this stuff. I mean, they hadn't forgotten about it. This isn't something you can just pull out of your hat.
Well, they did change the lead developer and a bunch of stuff like that. I mean, so that kind of, I mean, they probably tinkered around with the their vision of the product and how they were going to move forward with that. I mean, I don't know if they necessarily anticipated using print-on-demand when they first came up with the idea for Warhammer Fantasy 3rd Edition, or Fantasy Roleplay, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. That's what I'm gonna stake my claim and say I was right about ogres. I'm gonna say that we'll see quite a few releases of print-on-demand products this year to kind of supplement the fact that we won't see more than four box products, probably only three this year. Because I mean, they say that they're not gonna release the Enemy Within until the end of the third quarter, right?
Well, I'm assuming the end of third quarter, given their track record so far. It seems to be they're buying themselves plenty of time by saying that quarter, and
so I doubt they
have it until the end.
Yeah, I doubt they would announce that and then have a product that's going to be released in the second quarter. That isn't like,
that would be my guess. Why would you announce something further out and then have other stuff
apart from trying to generate some interest because of the weight that the Enemy Within campaign has? So that would be the only logical reason to do that, and I don't think that we can expect a box product in the second quarter.
Okay, so that I think that's my feelings as well. Sadly, I think second quarter is going to be predominantly print on demand content, if anything.
Time to get games in and speculate.
Yeah. Catch up and get ready.
We'll probably see a wizard print on demand. I'm assuming.
Kill your current party off so that when in Q3 you can start Enemy Within.
I wonder how that's going to work. Like, I wonder if it's conducive to have a party that's already second rank or third rank.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it is. That's not that hard.
Maybe you have to start later in the campaign, though.
Or you just, you know, beef up the encounters slightly. I mean, right. I haven't found any game yet which, I mean, certain scenarios encouraged you to be second career to play it, but I haven't found any of them where you had to be. Or there, one was too easy or too hard. It just doesn't really seem to work that way, because the GM can so easily just modify the number of creatures you're fighting or give you a slight advantage somewhere, and it becomes a moot point. I mean, certainly if you're going to fight Archeon somewhere, it might be a different story. But
as in a halfling point? Oh, I'm waking up now. That was a pretty good one.
You tell yourself that.
I have to. No one else will.
Aaron Mokhtar, the Klingon, writes in. That's my personal nickname for him. It's not actually how he refers to himself.
I think he did like that nickname, though.
I mean,
you're a badass. Why wouldn't you?
He writes in, how would the Enemy Within scale based on player rank? Can a rank 3 or 4 player play the whole campaign with everything scaled up to his level? Is there a system for this, or will it be up to the GM to make the changes?
It's almost like Aaron knew Lester's question and just asked it too late.
Sorry, Aaron.
I think we kind of just addressed that concept, at least, where we don't know if there will be scaling options built into the campaign, but I think a skilled GM should be able to adjust the encounter difficulties based on, you know, the sophistication level of his group, the number of players in his group, and the career level.
They talk about how to do that in the Game Master's Guide or whatever you call it, so...
Yeah, I don't think that they would retread that material, take up space in the books to retread.
Frankly, the easiest way to do it is add one bad guy or take a bad guy away and keep it going. There's really not a whole lot.
Add X bad guys or take X bad guys or create environmental issues or whatever. Like, if it's not raining, you can make it rain. If that's gonna, you know, affect your archer's ability to just snipe everybody, because that's always my problem with my play group, is they all build archers, and then they just, like, kill all the animals that I try to kill them with. Because I try to kill my party, because they frustrate me when they just destroy all of my animals.
If anybody's interested in listening to the original Enemy Within, it looks like there's a group that's playing it, and we have a link to it. Are we going to feature that on the website?
Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes. This, for those of you who aren't familiar with this, a couple of the listeners were nice enough to share the link with us. Another group, they've played it and have since finished it. I'm not sure how long ago it was, but they did a live play session through the entire campaign of the Enemy Within 1.0. And I think it's something like 35 or 40 sessions long. But we'll link that website, and if you guys want to experience 1.0, you can definitely listen through that. And I've listened to the first episode or two, and they do a nice job.
Everybody do do.
Oh, Lord.
All right. We've got a couple of listeners who also commented that I think if The Enemy Within was a direct conversion of the rules and system to 3rd edition, then awesome for new players. But the old guard might go, meh. If the 3rd edition, if the Enemy Within 3rd edition is more a GM guide than a walkthrough, then I think it will have something for everyone.
What do you guys think he's getting at there? I mean, the first part makes sense. You know, is it, if it's a direct conversion of 3rd edition, new players, great. Old players, hey, we've done this already. What do you mean? What do you think he's getting at with the GM guides and a walkthrough?
Mm-hmm. I think maybe that's a veiled way of saying that he is, you know, hoping that it's more of a sandbox campaign rather than a railroad campaign, where, you know, maybe it just presents here's the city, here are the major NPCs. Here's what's going on,
and
let your players get involved how they will. I don't tend to think that's what's going to happen. I think it's going to be much more specifically, like, here's a sequence of events. Now, any good GM can obviously kind of take that and run with it and turn it into a sandbox if they wanted to, but especially the original Enemy Within is written in such a way that, yes, there's a certain sequence of events. In fact, it comes with a calendar, which is actually really awesome, and I highly recommend, even if you have never seen it before and you just came into Warhammer with 3rd edition, that you get the that you try and find online the Warhammer calendars. But there's definitely a sequence of events in the original Enemy Within where, you know, okay, if the PCs don't get involved, then on this day something's going to happen. So it's written in a way that there's a definite sequence of events, but how the players choose to interact and the sequence that they choose to, you know, go to locations is a little up in the air.
Yeah.
So I tend to think that at very least it's going to be like that. It's going to be written more straightforward, but with a little bit of wisdom.
Let's look at one of the other things that why Fantasy Flight would introduce this campaign and the way they structure it. What are the side benefits this gives the game? We know ahead of time that it's focusing on Averheim. So, like Ubersreich was the focus of some of the earlier games, and that is now a fully developed city that you can have your own adventures in separate from the written adventures, Averheim is now going to have a similar level of detail. And they say they're going to give that same level of detail to several other cities in the Empire. So, even if you aren't playing the specific adventure that's given in The Enemy Within, you should have this is to address the GM guide thing he's talking about. A GM should have resources available now to have NPCs, city descriptions, maybe some maps for other locations throughout the Empire, independent of the Enemy Within campaign.
And you can use that as a springboard to detail your own cities within the Empire, So I think regardless of what you plan on doing with it, even if
it should be a good resource in general.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It should be a great resource.
Yeah. Well, and Graham Davis being a writer, and if it takes any hint from the original Enemy Within, like the first, after the initial box set, the first adventure, Shadows Over Bogenhofen, really richly details the town, the merchant town of Bogenhofen.
Mm-hmm.
So your players can use that as a base, and there's enough information. There's a huge map. that's got like 40 different, you know, locations, like guild halls and you know, inns and stuff like that, and, you know, like 100 NPCs. So, yeah, I mean, I'm hoping that part of it should be kind of a location gazetteer that gives you major places of interest and NPCs. Because they're the gazetteer for Bogenhofen even tells you about like the various temples that are set up and who maintains them and how well maintained are they, and
it's super detailed.
And let's also face it, Bogenhofen is the most fun city to say.
It is.
It's awesome.
I am cautiously optimistic that this will be one of the best products released today.
I'm actually, because my gaming budget is very tight, exceedingly tight at the moment, when they announced the Enemy Within campaign release, I actually decided that I'd have to put Heroes Call on the back burner, and I probably won't buy Heroes Call until after I buy the Enemy Within.
Well, it says that the Enemy Within ties into Heroes Call, so it might actually even be smarter to do that.
Right, right.
All right, that'll wrap it up for this episode of the Reckless Dice Podcast. We'll be back in 2 weeks with our next episode. Be sure to comment on the site, recklessdice.com, or shoot us an email at recklessdice@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Reckless Dice.
Until next time. Us on Facebook.
Yeah. Thank you, Timeline. Until next time, guys, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening, guys.
See ya.